August 24, 2021, it's the Walk from Pedro Show. Pedro Show. Happy Tuesday. Started off with Riftide, live in Dusseldorf, 1960. John Coltrane with Stan Getz, Oscar Peterson, Paul Chambers, and Jimmy Cobb. It was a Miles tour, but they had day off, and so rare kind of get together. That's bitching, right? After that, Pants Exploder. It's okay. I'm Wiccan.
Wiccan.
Yeah. To tell people, I'm not man alone. I wonder if those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention. I got Jason Lafarge from Brooklyn, right?
That's right.
Talking
from Brooklyn. Brooklyn. Prospect Heights.
Prospect Heights, part of Brooklyn. Are you still at the Caesar's Palace?
I am. Still sharing that space with Martin Beese. And,
we're going to get up to that. I just wanted to ask because that's actually my first connect about you coming into my consciousness because Brother Steve McKay.
Indeed. Missing much. Missing but yes.
Very big time. Very, very big time. Blue Prostitutes, stuff like that. I remember, you know, I joined him for Stooges gigs and he would catch me up on all his side projects with you guys. And it was just beautiful.
That's so cool. Yeah, I was.
But Jason.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Let's check out your journey through music, and we'll get to Brother Steven stuff. But let's fucking turn the Wayback Machine way back, and please bring your earliest musical recollection.
Well, I was raised not by musicians, but my dad was definitely an audiophile and loved music and mostly classical music, and had a really nice stereo with the Macintosh amps and he poured a lot of attention into his stereo system. So that's sort of what I grew up on and grew up with a deep appreciation for sound. And anyway, my dad played a lot of classical music, and I think I asked for a violin when I was age two, but they didn't give me one until I was six. So my earliest memories are of violin and of classical music. But at around age six, when I started taking violin lessons and started going that route, I had some next door neighbors, some teenage boys next door who, you know, played some Kiss for me in Boston and Aerosmith and what have you. I sort of got into rock around the same time I started playing violin, and I remember my parents asking my violin teacher if there was a rock music with a violin, and so she turned me on to ELO, and so I remember listening to Electric Light Orchestra, and that and Kiss were probably the first, you know, real things that I really listened to.
ELO had a couple of cello players, maybe a violin too. The violin I remember, Kansas.
Oh, sure, right, yeah. Which I never really got 70s, into Kansas.
You're talking about arena rock shit.
Right.
Now, of course, on the West Coast, there was a very famous cat who played with all kinds of people, Papa John Creech.
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah, at age six, that wasn't in my my sight, line of sight at that
point.
Well,
let me ask you, Jason, where was this pad?
This would have been in Macon, Georgia. I grew up in Macon, Georgia, up until teenage years, and then I went to Atlanta.
Okay, and... yeah, there's no instruments in the pad until they get you that violin, and you're influenced by your pop's classical music from his Righteous Stereo. What about the first record you bought with your own money?
Sure. So with my own money, it would have been in like December of 1976 because we were up visiting my Aunt May, and I had some Christmas money in my hand. And they had it on display at the, I think it was Camelot Music. It was either Camelot or Franklin Music at Lenox Square Mall in Atlanta. And they had a display of Kiss, Rock and Roll Over, and Destroyer. And I got both of those records right then. So those were the first that I bought with money
and
that
then,
I had in my hand.
First gig you went and saw?
I went to probably a lot of classical stuff early on, like classical concerts, Macon Symphony Orchestra and what have you. But the first non-classical show I saw was Dizzy Gillespie at the Grand Opera House in Macon, Georgia.
Yeah, you know, for me, music is music. So classical, you were probably, your pop was a fan and he probably took you, right?
Oh, absolutely. And but that would be the first one that I really remember, because classical, as much as
influenced you enough to ask for violin, so it wasn't like it was a plague or something. Well, let me ask
absolutely.
Jason,
sure.
Let me ask you about school. Were you in the choir or the orchestra or marching band or shit like that?
I was in the orchestra starting in middle school. I should take that back. Starting in elementary school in Macon, there was a very small music program, and I was in a small string quartet, I remember. And I remember actually getting out of class a couple of times to play in the string quartet. Later on in high school, middle school and high school, I was in the orchestra for sure.
Now, after school, in the afternoon, not graduate, bedroom band, garage band, basement band. You're rocking the violin with your buddies?
Here's the thing. Actually, here's the thing. The violin was constant from age six on, but then, I was into rock, so I really wanted a guitar. And I got a guitar around age nine, but I was a horrible student and studied from a dear family friend who's still a dear family friend, and I feel bad about how terrible of a student I was, but I was playing through a Mel
Bay. Terrible student, Jason, you mean like no practice?
Yeah, well, I just wasn't that interested because I wanted to rock, and I was playing, you know, folk songs from a Mel Bay book, and it just didn't appeal to me in any way, so I didn't put the effort into it because of that. Then at age 12, my next door neighbor in that same building where I learned from those other guys earlier on at age six, another couple moved in who ended up being hugely influenced, Kurt Peacock, and he sold me his drum set at age 12. It was this orange sparkle drum set. And from that point on, I played drums for a number of years, driving my parents crazy. And then I got another guitar at age 14, and then I started really playing guitar again. So in high school, I was basically in a band where I played guitar, but I had already at that point been playing drums.
So you only used the violin like with school stuff?
Yes.
There was a violin rock, well, I guess maybe a few. Montevideo Orchestra had Jerry Goodman, so I did see them in the 70s.
So good.
And it
so
seemed
good.
Like it, they were all playing lead violin. Right. Billy Cobham on the drums. So
good.
What about,
yeah.
Jason, tell me about, I'm interested in this drum thing.
Sure.
Okay. Did you take lessons?
I just heard?
We lost Charlie Watts.
I just heard that too. It's amazing. What a career that guy had.
I'm going to ask about lessons. Or did you learn off records, like listening to Charlie and shit?
I totally learned off of records, and mostly at that point, at age 13 or whatever, that I was really getting into that. It was metal. I was listening to Iron Maiden and Judas Priest and Rush, and trying to, you know, nowhere near as good as any of those drummers, but that's what I was trying to play along with.
I think of Macon, Georgia, I think it was Jim Brown.
Sure. At this point, I would have, at age 13, we would have moved to Atlanta. So I was in the suburbs of Atlanta at this point, beating on my drums in the suburbs.
But did you ever get, you know, some funk, some Clyde Stubblefield?
I never was that wasn't my realm at that, certainly not at that time.
I remember kind of segregation of music, right? For some weird reason. Because rock and roll is definitely black music. I mean, it comes way back.
Sure.
It's a mule. It's a mixture of all kinds of stuff. And that's why I said music's music. So I wasn't trying to get all one-upmanship on it. It's interesting that you balls out trying these different instruments. I think that's really fucking happening. Because they're not so separate. Like, if I'm going to say music's music, also in the devices, the division of labor, I guess you'd call it.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's true.
I would like to say, going back to the
different music being music, shortly after seeing Dizzy Gillespie in 78, I went with my next door neighbors and saw Kenny Rogers. So those were my first two shows I ever seen. I'm probably the only person whose first two shows were Dizzy Gillespie and Kenny Rogers.
Yeah.
Just saying.
That's a trippy. First gig I saw was T-Rex.
Oh, wow. That's beautiful.
T-Rex at Long Beach Auditorium. And I can't remember the second one. It might have been, what were they called? Something of the Airways. Masters of the Airways. It played at the Warner Theater.
Oh, wow. Don't know that one.
Yeah, I know. They weren't a big band or anything, but memory gets blurred. So, look, you sent me a bunch of Pants Exploder. I want to play some more. Judy's getting involved.
Oh, awesome. Thanks.
Thank you. Susie was a ventriloquist in a way, turning everything on air into an expose. She dragged your name through the dirt just to sport and settle out of court. And her network boss would say that we're going to Canada one day. He was the last man standing in a Polish camp way back in 45. Then he tied a siren in, Grace rang his lawyer, left his devil's wife. He made a child of the Camorra on a yacht just out of Napoli. And he knocked her up that week. In his twin engine Gulfstream. But time's to set off on his trail of slime. He found the old French quarters break water and he stayed a while. He got a job in repossession, seizing speedboats and the odd jet ski. But he made a better living, cutting slack to all the people, kept their palms well greased. He bought the shadow bunga bunga by the beach to lure the rich high flyers. Saw cameras in the bedrooms and an office in the Virgin Islands. But time's no friend of mine. Land crisis in the cave worldwide by satellite dish. Meanwhile, the fake that built a pyramid scheme that made him Ponzi king. Then he started running with the shots and was cooling on his fresh new bride. But then one night went up alone, a bunga bunga with the victor's wife. And he'd come home like just sick. So she hired a private dick. Meanwhile, his station got a fraction of the traction and the ratings fall. Till headhunters found Susie on a date that didn't nail the law. She brought a glamour to the camera and a panoramic paranoia. Yeah, the network ratings soared. And they banked their cash offshore. But time's not ready. One day Susie got a tip off about the business scam and nailed him live. His rich buddies lost millions and he took up to the Virgin Islands. They sung him high with lawsuits sinking into Palma, drag him home. But he blackmailed everybody with his bunga bunga videos. So then Lenny sent Susie with a camera crew to talk him down. But the fixer pulled the gun on him and stuck it into Susie's mouth. He played a video and then he cheated live on air and shot himself. With a 38 special after which Lenny's hit man well. Then Lenny lost the station and his reputation went to rest. In an undisclosed location wearing slippers and a bulletproof vest. Location wearing slippers. in an undisclosed location wearing slippers and a bulletproof vest.
Show that chunk of music. Start off Pants Exploder, Judy's Getting Involved, Northern Jaw, brand new, Diminishing Returns, Mold Omen, Helium Kit, I think it's reissue, out of Baltimore, Cedric Noel, brand new, Komu, trippy word, C-O-M-U-U, yeah, I like it. The Chair Recognizes the Gentleman, Bombas Brendan, King Champion Sounds with Mia Doi Todd. Remembering Easby Abbey. Tropical Fuckstorm, brand new. Reporting of a failed campaign. And finally, Pants Exploder again with Worms of Endearment. Okay, so when you guys are doing the jams after school, are you writing your own stuff? Or are you, like me and D.B. Lou, trying to copy songs off records?
A little of both. I remember the band that I had in high school would be... We did write some original tunes, and we actually went into the studio and recorded them. So that was my first studio experience was like age 17 or so. Although I have no idea where those files are now.
Band also do gigs, or was it just a practice?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
In fact, my very first show ever was what later became the Masquerade in Atlanta. It was Excelsior Mill at the time.
I'm sure you played there. A little bit of Hollywood in Atlanta, Georgia. Everything painted black. I did several gigs here.
I'm sure, yeah.
It was like an old sawmill or something.
It was. It was an old Excelsior mill, actually. It was like sawdust or something. Crazy
rusty
place.
But a little bit. Yeah. Good people there, and I had some good times here. What was the name of this band, Jason?
It was called Acacia. That was my first band, Acacia.
Acacia, and,
Acacia, like the tree.
Well, a Freemason will get buried with a sprig.
Oh, really? I did not know that.
Yeah, it's very heavy. That there's a big tradition behind that stuff, Acacia. It's not just any. Wow, that's trippy. And you guys just picked it out of a dictionary or what?
Yeah, I honestly don't. One of the guys decided
about,
on it.
Tell
I
me about the first gig.
The first gig would have been at like I said, it was in the basement of the Excelsior Mill playing with a band called the Shadow Puppets in Atlanta, which was a band that would play basically in front of a big white sheet and just, a blank projector on them. I don't remember them having anything on the projector like butthole surfers or anything, like something projected over them. I just remember it being white and on a sheet, and they were the Shadow Puppets. But they were a band. I remember they had a release in Atlanta that was...
You know, Georgie had a slang for what he called one-armed shadow boxing. You can imagine what that's slang for. He had about 10 million slangs for that activity. But that you brought to my memory what Georgie, very creative man, not just on the drums. Great. He wrote some of the greatest Minutemen lyrics. I mean, so D. Boone, but what was the filler supplier with that area? Remember
awesome.
D. Boone saying, it's too spacey, man. I don't know what you're trying to say. Okay. So after school, do you pursue music in higher education?
Yeah, I did. I actually got a degree for – or I didn't get a degree. I got a scholarship for violin to a small school on the border of Alabama, Columbus College at the time. It's now known as Columbus State University. I went on a music performance scholarship.
Well, Columbus,
and
Georgia, I think that's where the Confederate Navy Museum is.
Oh, is it? Well, it's a big army town. I don't know about Navy. Well, no, yeah, it's inland. So
but some of their stuff was on rivers and ironclads. And I don't know what.
Oh, that's true.
I just
that's
remember foreign going through. You know, because there's Columbus is all over the fucking place, right?
Yeah. Columbus, Georgia is a military town. Fort Benning is there, which is the large military installation. So I went there for violin and learned a lot, but realized really quickly that I didn't have what it took to be a music performance major, certainly not for violin. And I basically changed my degree to a music education major and then realized I would end up conducting a high school orchestra and killing myself at some point, probably because I knew how horrible working with a high school orchestra could be. So I got out of that. I ended up getting a philosophy degree from Georgia State University. I got out of the music as an academic.
Academic, but you didn't get out of music, right? And I know you as a bass man, so when the fuck does that happen?
So that happened towards the end of Pineal Ventana, which was my band in Atlanta that I had joined. Actually, they had started in 93. I joined them in 96. And I'd started off playing violin and guitar, mostly guitar, but playing some violin with Pineal Ventana, and then some extra percussion when it was necessary. But we had a bass player until near the end of the band, and then the longtime bass player, John Whitaker, left, and there was a void there, and two other multi-instrumentalists came in, but we all sort of took turns on bass, I think, but that's sort of when that bug started with me playing bass.
So that's your first time on the bass, okay?
Really,
what did you get? Fender?
Travis Bean. I had the Travis Bean.
Oh, that was in that picture.
Right from the get-go.
Yeah, they weighed a buttload, right?
They do, but you know, my main guitar from when I got that guitar in 14 is a Gibson Les Paul, so I was used to a lot of weight for a guitar, and I don't feel right with a light instrument. It just doesn't feel right on my body.
Well, they have
yeah, the aluminum neck. But the nice thing about the Travis Beans was they were very well balanced. Like the body was, it would hang nicely. I've tried a couple of those Kramers and it's just so neck heavy. The second you let go with
that's
your left
the
hand,
other aluminum diving. Neck.
That's the other aluminum neck from that period. There's newer ones now. There's, you know, Electrical Guitar Company and there's some other aluminum neck.
For bass, okay, because you've been on the violin, you've been on the guitar, you've been on the drums, and now you move the bass. But what was your, and obviously no lessons, right? Learn as you do.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
although I had taken guitar lessons, though, so, you know, I mean, there's.
Okay, let's get into that. So. Is the bass really a four-string guitar, or is it a four-string drum?
It's a combination of both,
yeah,
I
would
think.
Say it's really more of a four-string drum, okay? Yeah,
yeah.
It looks like a fucking guitar. But the way, God, its notes are way there in the kick. Maybe
yeah, it's true.
That's it.
It's true, but at least with the knowledge of the guitar, you have a knowledge of where the notes are on the bass as well. You know what I mean? It's basically the lowest four strings of a guitar just down octave. So unless you change things up like we do in Vance Exploder, but learning the traditional way. So it is definitely part percussion instrument, and that is what I love about the bass.
I mean, sure. If you think about it, of course, the bass guitar isn't really the traditional bass. The bass was actually a fucking giant violin with out the chin part. No, I think because they wanted the timber in with the different sizes. You know, they did it with the reeds. They did it with the strings, with the brass. Just bigger, more tube, more length of string.
Sure.
But then you keep in the same family, right? That's why you won't see saxophones in symphonies.
That's right.
Something with the timbre. Right. All notes aren't created equal. For example, on my bass guitar, I got the B note exists on all four strings. Same
right,
note,
yep.
But they sound fucking different. Different
way
diameter,
different
place on the neck. Yeah, so these kind of things. So I'm wondering, did you like for me, Jack Bruce was a big go-to. Did you have somebody like that?
Yeah, you know, maybe guys like Jeff Pincus David William Sims. Yeah, sure. Or David William Sims of Jesus Lizard. Something like that. About that definitely.
That was
stuck
more
with
Austin.
Me.
And I mean, yeah. Dave Sims more like Tracy Pugh.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I love that stuff.
But
yeah.
Both those guys are great bassmen. I love both of them. Mr. Sims down in New York City guy a long time. I think an accountant. Yeah, it's a two, like Franz Kafka said, the two desks, right? And, Jeff Pincus, he's in North Carolina now, and I think he's doing, like, banjo and shit.
He is. I've heard his new album. It's really, really good. Yeah, it's like psychedelic banjo.
Yeah. Jeff Pincus, very creative cat, man. And Mr. Sims, too. Also, before that, what was it? It was him and Mr. Yao, Scratch Acid.
Scratch Acid, right, yeah. With Ray Washam on drums.
Right, Ray Washam.
Yeah.
Really good. I mean, if you're picking inspirations of bass players, those are two great ones.
Yeah, I've always loved the albums that they were on from those bands.
And also seeing bands in the clubs, you know, different than arena rock. You know, you can actually see I watched Lorna Doom. Wow, that's how they do that. You know what I mean? Even though you could tell they were just starting, there was something really empowering about seeing somebody really work it in front of you instead of like some tiny object.
Speck.
Yeah,
right.
Speck. You got it, James.
Yeah.
We're at the end of the first hour, August 24, 2021, Dish Wap Pedo Show. Special guest, Jason Lafarge. Hold tight for hour two. August 24, 2021. It's the second hour of the Wap for Pedro.
que me va matando, que me va matando. Triste, triste y solitario, sin padre ni madre, que lloren mis penas. Triste, triste y solitario, sin padre ni madre, que lloren mis penas. Vivo solo en la cantina, bebiendo y sufriendo mis crueles aventuras. Cielo, ¿por qué me castigas? ¿Por qué no mitigas este sufrimiento? Cielo, ¿por qué me castigas? ¿Por qué no mitigas este sufrimiento?
Oh,
Watt from Pedro shows start off the second hour with Moth Dust from Halex. This is some music that Jason floated. Manuel Armida after that. Where's the Music? Got Yellow Knife. Well, he's Mexico City, but he's the Northwest Territory. Chicha Libre. Here, I thought you were in this band all this time. It's still the kitchen music. I love it. But you did have a hand in making, realizing the recording. But
I recorded that album yesterday.
Yeah. Your man behind the curtain. Yeah. Pay attention. El Borrachito, the little drunk, huh? And then Lucas Abella out of Sydney. Q isn't for anything. Deity 5000, you took it all. What are these projects, Deity 5000 and Halex?
So Deity 5000 was the band that I joined right after moving back to Atlanta from that Columbus college experience, and main guy in D&D 5000, Kurt Hagemeyer, was in Acacia with me in high school, and so he was sort of wanting to do this metal industrial thing, and he remembered that I had played drums, and he wasn't looking for another guitarist, which he knew that I played guitar as well, but he was looking for a drummer, and so I started playing drums with him. And that lasted from like 92 until 96, and that's when I joined Pineal Ventana. Halex was up here in Brooklyn, and following a Blue Prostitute show at Union Pool, Andrew Barker, who I believe was DJing that night, approached me, Andrew being just a phenomenal jazz drummer, and I knew him from Atlanta. He was in Gold Sparkle Band in Atlanta, and with Charles Waters. And anyway, he approached me and said that he had been writing some metal music. He'd been playing guitar, and he'd always wanted to play guitar and play some metal. And he'd been writing these songs and wanted to know if I'd be interested in playing bass on them. And Hans Chu was the drummer of Halex. And the second all three of us got in the room and started playing, I was like, oh, yeah, I could see this being a fun project. And so it lasted two or three years. I think it lasted 3 years when Hans he's also a singer-songwriter guy, and he got busy with a couple of his other projects and had to drop one of them. And once he left, I just wasn't – none of us were really keen on going any further without Hans. So it ended after only a few years.
Okay.
But it was a fun project.
But this is I'm getting a little timeline together because you make the move. From Georgia
yes.
to New York to Brooklyn, right?
Yes, and that would have been in 2002. We had recorded two albums. Pineal Ventana had recorded two albums with Martin Beese in Brooklyn, and he and I had stayed in touch a little bit by email.
Well, I didn't know. Let's talk about this. How did you meet Martin?
We met Martin. We had recorded an album, Breathe As You Might, in Atlanta, and so we were signed by another label out of Seattle called Unit Circle Records, and they gave us a recording budget, and we had a choice of where we could go. We were all familiar with Martin's work with Swans, and we were all sort of Swans fans. And then we had a very dear friend of ours, Kathleen Lynch, who's in the band Beanie Seed. She was also in Butthole Surfers as their new dancer in the 80s.
They didn't even have a name for her.
Ta-da the Shit Lady, I believe, was one of her nicknames. Yeah.
But Martin, Martin also did the Sister Sonic Youth record. That's where I meet him.
Was it Evil or Sister?
It's Evil.
Yeah.
Evil. You're right. It's Evil, and there was no fucking booth.
Yeah.
Like we're in the one big room.
It was one room, yeah. The studio is bigger now because he got the downstairs a few years after that, so we have a really two large tracking rooms downstairs. But in those days, it was just the control room. Martin's side, where the board was, and then where the other side is, where everything was recorded, that's now my side. So we sort of have a dueling control room situation. So I've got that side where the parquet floor is, where the drums used to sit.
Right.
That's how the place is divided now.
You know, if you're talking about Pineal Ventana, now we can play some for the listeners.
So awesome.
Charlotte. It's Naomi. Long time since hearing your voice. I'll be delighted to come to the Silver Sister Supper for Louise. And just count me in, and I'll see you on the 16th. Thanks a lot.
Hi, Charlotte. This is Laura Meyer with ADK, and I just wanted to let you know that I plan on being at Louise's dinner, and I will see you guys on Wednesday then. Thank you. Bye.
There was a time in this country when mothers and fathers beat the devil out of the kids. And now they say, let the little darlings live as they please. Beautiful, lovely little flowers. Let them bloom and bloom. Little divine creatures. They're just believing the good, you know. Just direct them, they'll be all right.
Used to have preachers that stood up in the pulpit in America and said, this is the word of God.
Show that chunk of music start out with Pino Ventana with liner notes, but spelled trippy, like L-E-Y-N-E-R. And then Black Pariah Sweep from Black Pariah. what do you call that? Eponymous, huh? Pineal ventata, or pineal.
Pineal, yeah.
Yeah, and you spelled it both ways. One is one word, one is two words.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
It should be two words, right?
Two words, yeah, two words.
SSS, the lamb with no heads. Okay. And Pineal, you guys, it was just local, right? You guys didn't tour.
Oh, we toured. We toured East Coast and Midwest. We never got out to the West Coast, which is a shame. Never got outside of the country, which is a real shame. We toured on every release. We would at least put in, 10 days to, I think our longest tour was 3 weeks.
Like New England. So.
New England, Midwest, yeah, exactly.
Well, you get straight up the coast. Towns are close.
Yeah, exactly. That helps. Yeah. That helps for sure.
Because out west, oh my God, such hell rides. You got to really fucking go for it. But
then you also have to be smart in booking things. Because I remember we did one ridiculous thing where I think we drove from Boston to Peoria. It was like a 22-hour drive
in
between.
That's where my mom grew up after Wyoming.
Oh wow!
It's the home of Caterpillar tractor.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that either. It was interesting.
About 200 miles south of Chicago.
Yeah, a long way from Boston, that's for sure. Not what you want to book right after Boston.
That's a hell ride.
Yeah.
I-80 or I-90.
I think it was
across. Oh, my God. But you learned. did any of your bands ever come out west?
No, never. Unfortunately, never. We never made it out west. In fact, that was the only band other than Halex did a very small Midwestern tour, but PV was the only band that I really toured with.
So you really invested time in running the studio or help run the studio or run it?
Run it. Well, it's two different businesses in the same space, basically. We don't ever work at the same time.
Right.
Basically how it came down was Martin had emailed me saying that he didn't get a copy of our last CD, and I just happened to be coming to New York with my wife that weekend for vacation, and so we came by the studio, and he happened to mention that he was looking to have somebody else move their studio in to bring down overhead costs because he wasn't using it 24/7, it's just him. And so I went back to my job at Tower Records in Atlanta thinking, not even thinking about that, but maybe a little thing in the back of my head, maybe. And then holiday season was kicking in, and I just realized that I'd been at Tower for like 10 years at that point, and I loved it. It was good for being in a band and what have you, but it was time to go. And at that same time, Caesar's Palace actually existed as a studio in the singer of Pineal Ventana's basement, Clara Clamp, it's her stage name, Danette, it's her name. And anyway, long story short, she got pregnant, and I realized that I couldn't keep the studio in her basement, and I didn't have anywhere else to go. And Martin had just offered this thing, had just mentioned that this thing was going to happen up in Brooklyn, and I talked it over with my wife, and she was from Western New York originally and was tired of living in the South, and it was a pretty easy sell. So we got out and came to Brooklyn.
Wow. Become a studio meister.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, you did have a little experience there with the basement Atlanta and stuff.
But never in a professional studio, other than being in professional studios.
It was another layer of evolution, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And then, with the instruments, besides the violin, you learn by doing.
Yes.
Wow.
It's true.
Because, people, they'll go to school to learn studio stuff, But I think the way to do it is like you intern, right? Or you get in with Martin Beese, a master like that, sensei.
Like an apprenticeship, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, right. Although that isn't really what I did. It was more sort of into the fire and
right, just here you go.
Learn a lot. But I did have his knowledge, and if I needed to ask him something, I did have him there, and so that was certainly helpful.
And he's
a great guy. So.
And I got to play with him a couple years ago. And
I remember
Toronto.
That. It was in Toronto or something,
at
right?
The Horseshoe, right?
Right.
And it was just so good to see him again. And his band was great, and it was beautiful. We're at the end of that second hour, August 24, 2021. Dish Watt Peters, for special guest, Jason Lafarge. Hold tight for hour three. August 24, 2021. It's the third hour of the Watch from Pedro show.
Thank you.
Watch for Pedro show start off the third hour. Scum Quartet with Steve McKay. That is Steve. Endless Existence. Emma Jean Thackeray after that with Mercury in Retrograde. She's on last week. Patronized Homoplasms from World with a tune called World History. And then the Scum Quartet featuring Steve McKay doing Maintaining the Cosmic Order with Machine Guns. Tell me about you meeting first time, Brother Steve McKay, Jason.
So that would have been in 2004. Scott Neidegger, who had you had on your show not all that long ago, a couple months ago maybe, he and I had been friends for a while, and I was sort of part of his loose group of people called Radon.
The
Radon Collective. The Radon Collective, yeah. It was sort of a group of musicians and what have you that helped each other out and played together, and it was kind of special. From all over the world, there were people from all over the people, Europe and Asia, and they were everywhere. He had met Steve and had started doing some shows with Steve. And this was, I believe, just prior to the Stooges reunion thing kicking in, was when Scott was doing this with him. And so then in 2004, I guess the Stooges thing had already started at that point. But he brought him to New York to do a couple of shows and play at FMU. And, Scott.
Ryan Turner.
And Brian Turner. Brian Turner and Scott sort of set this up and came and played this show with, I believe, Kamielski was also...
Check.
He was also part of that. And we did the FMU show, which I shared with you in a story that I... my very first time meeting Steve, and we're just jumping right into it and playing. It's like, okay, you guys are on the air now. And I had plugged into this bass amp and it cranked it up. I mean, it was like on 10, but it was barely emitting any sound. I knew that wasn't a good thing, but it was the only thing I could see that was meant for bass. And roughly 5 minutes into the whole thing, I started smelling smoke, and I realized I wasn't hearing myself. And I was like, this is no good. So there was a Music Man guitar amp next to it, and I just moved the mic over and threw it in. And that's what ended up being released on Steve's Tunnel Diner album
a couple of years
later, which is funny. But met him there. We ended up playing that night at Tonic, opening it for Nick Turner.
Lemmy's band.
From Hawkwind.
Right, and also that Mr. Zorn's pad.
Yep, at Tonic, exactly. It was a neat place. And so played a show with him that night, and then we played a show with a much larger ensemble the next night up at SUNY Purchase, and it was kind of a disaster. I just remember no one could hear each other, and everybody was just sort of playing against each other. It was just one of those weird shows that just should never have really happened. But the show at Tonic was amazing.
You know, that's the thing about that stuff, right? You throw the dice.
Sure.
You know what I mean? If it was automatic, you know, it'd be just a Xerox machine or something. But it's kind of a gamble.
And it absolutely
like you
is.
Said, I think one of the key things was you couldn't hear each other. It's about listening when you improvise, right?
Absolutely. And when you have that many people just playing pretty much at the same volume, and it was just, there was nothing to.
You don't get any interesting conversation going.
Absolutely, and it was that's my memory of it anyway. Maybe people in the audience who were paying attention saw it.
And now these recordings, Scum Quartet,
right?
That hadn't developed yet, though. Yet, right?
No. That was a few years later, and that was part of Jonathan Saldana and Scott Neidegger's project, United Scum Sound Clash, and basically we recorded. What you heard is the Scum Quartet, what you just played, but it was heavily edited for the actual United Scum Sound Clash release, like just stuff looped over and what have you. Basically, we recorded that quartet, and then we recorded a bunch of other people like Stefania from OVO and guys from the Hop Frog Collective in L.A. All these people came and played. Just put stuff down, and it was heavily edited and put together as this project, United Scum Sound Clash Machine Guns was the name of the album. And that, I think it was like 2006 that came out, maybe 2007. But it was all done in Portugal, Jonathan Saldana and Scott Niger, as far as putting it all together and releasing it. So jump ahead to a few months ago, and you got in touch with me looking for solo tracks of Steve, and I started going through what I had on hard drives and backup DVDs from, 15 years ago and what have you, and came across those, and initially didn't listen to the whole thing. I wanted to get you the sax track so you guys could use it, and just put it on a pile next to my desk for when I had some time to listen to it. And I was like, okay, I need to listen to that stuff. And when I did, I was floored. I was just like, wow, this is so good just by itself without the editing and all this stuff. And this really should just be a release on its own. And so I got in touch with Scott Neidiger, and he totally agreed. And so he did some artwork for the album cover. And our good friend Jay Reeve and Vidi Paternostro have the Mutant Sound label on Net label. And they put it out a month or so ago, I guess. And
it was beautiful. Really beautiful.
Yeah. Thank you for making me look for the files.
Well,
it's awesome.
Look, you were helping me and Larry, too, give tribute to Stooge music. You know, we love those guys, the Ashton Brothers and Brother Steve.
Oh, man. And you guys were so good. I'm so glad that they chose you as their bass player. It was really a sort of a perfect
very
match,
kind,
I thought.
Very kind. Look, here's you playing with Michael and the Swans.
Awesome. Thank you.
ginger vine is inside Madeline. The stardust is yellow and red, and it's mapping out time inside of her head. Now there's always Madeline rising up from where our limbs intertwine. Now walking a random invisible line, clutching a note to the side of the vine. Now you're free. Now you're free to drift across the sky. Now you're free to say, just come in. Now you're free.
Thank you. La 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 la. La 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 la. La 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 la. La 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 la.
Hot for Pedro show, last music for this edition. Swans with Inside Madeline. Or Madeline. I fuck up everyone's language. I'm so sorry. Regis Phil's Bin, Brother Phil Mammoth with Welcome to the Charcoal State Deja Vu Mix. He lives in the fire. We got hundreds of thousands of acres burning up here. Not just Cali, but the whole West. And so sad. And then finally, Control from Pineal Ventana. What about your shift with Michael Swan?
So I started working with him really thanks to Martin BC. He had been working on an Angels of Light record called Everything is Good Here, Please Come Home. And that was roughly when I was moving my studio in. And Michael needed digital files instead of half-inch tape for the mastering. And I happened to have a Pro Tools rig, and so I got the job of transferring things. And from that point, I also did like a couple of background vocals and things like that for that album, Devendra Banhart.
You know, Larry made a few Swans albums.
Oh, I know. And in fact, that's
small
that,
world, Jason.
Yeah, but that that particular Angels of Light record that actually has it's a bit of contention for poor Larry, actually.
I know.
That's the album that Michael erased all of Larry and Dana's tracks, I think.
Right, a little drama.
Yeah, anyway, yeah.
Without
anyway,
human beings without a little drama being involved.
Of course not, yeah. So anyway, that's when I started working with him, and then he hired me to record overdubs for Devendra Banhart, two albums that he put out on him, on his label.
Sure. So where can people find you on the internet? Because we're running out of time here, Jason.
You know, if you Google me, you'll find me, but
SteveIsPalaceRecording.com. There are many search engines out there, people. It's not just that one company.
Right. Indeed,
Ian
that is true.
Ian MacKay would have, like, slapped a ball.
But SteveIsPalaceRecording.com is the website, but it's just not up and running just yet, but it'll be up. There was an old Caesar's Palace used to be the website, but there's some drama about that, but it's yeah, moving forward. But yeah, SteveIsPalaceRecording.com.
Well, look, when you get more stuff happening, you know, in the pipeline, especially as things are coming back a little bit, still safe and everything, but you've probably been trading files over the internet anyway, like giving me and Larry this stuff. And so, but when you do, will you come back on the show and let's play it and talk about it?
Oh, hell yeah, man. Anytime. You tell me when, I will be here.
Yeah, okay. Well, you let me know what's coming through the pipeline, right?
I will, of course. I'll keep you up to date.
Pants Exploder is your current thing. So
Pants Exploder is my current thing.
Yeah, there's a new Pants Exploder coming.
Yes, there is. In fact, that is one good thing that's happened during this time. We've recorded about an album and a half worth of material. So
when you get it working out, come on the Watt Pedro show. Let's have a Pants Exploder guest appearance.
Hell yeah, you got it, man. Okay. Will do. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Okay. People, it's been August 24, 2020. Let's do Spot Pedro. So, give you powder, right?